Welcome to the Let Good Things In show. I'm your host, Amanda Acker. I am so happy you are here. At the Let Good Things In show, we talk all about second chances, resiliency, following your intuition, and even music. Listen to hear stories of hope and to be inspired. Remember, you are stronger than you think. Let's dive in. Hi, my amazing humans. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, I'm so excited to be bringing you yet another amazing conversation on the Let Good Things In show. Before I dive into today's episode, I just have a few things. As always, if you're loving the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a review so more people are able to find the show. If you have a suggestion, question, or you're interested in being a guest, please send me an email, amanda@amandaacker.com. Last name is spelled A-C-K-E-R. I would love to hear from you. And if you're interested in being a guest, I would love to connect and have that 15-minute intro call and get you on the show. One little tidbit about that as well. If you're listening and you do have a story to tell, but you don't want your name out there, that's totally fine. We can definitely do that still without your face, name, whatever you're comfortable with. So just shoot me that email and we can get connected. The last thing before we dive into the episode is there are going to be some changes to the show coming up, including new intro, outro, and new artwork. For the show, I want to better depict what this show really is about. I did go through some growing pains since the beginning of finding the right guests and also honing in on my skills, which I still am, as being a better host and really being prepared and having deeper conversations with my guests. And in that, I just want to let you know, too, that the three pillars you will continue to hear about on the show will be stories of the formerly incarcerated, those who suffer with addiction and or mental illness. So those are the three things that I'm mainly focused on here on out until maybe something else changes. But those are the stories that I want to highlight because I feel that it's my mission to share these stories. It's my purpose. And I want the world to know that even though we may have these societal labels on us that first we're human and no matter what we've done in our past, that does not make us bad people. And just to really focus on that because I lived, if you've been listening since the beginning, you'll know this, but I lived from the age of 15 to about 35 living in this spiral of I'm not good enough, I'm alone, no one else understands. And I want people who may be feeling that way to know, number one, that they're not alone, and to also help those who maybe have not experienced these things in their lives, but maybe have experienced it through someone else to know, you know, the truth about it and to hear the stories and to know that we're all human, right? And we all make mistakes or we may fall, you know, victim to addiction, or I guess I shouldn't say fall victim, but you know what I mean. So I just want to help change the stigmas around those three topics. So, anyways, let's get to the good part, which is this amazing conversation that I got to have. I am so grateful for it. It is one of the most interesting and just a really good conversation. And it's really cool because my guest actually asked me a question or two throughout the episode. So I really, really enjoy this conversation. And I hope you will too. So my guest for this episode is Ron L. Worley II. Ron is a successful business owner, real estate investor, mentor, and self-made millionaire who follows his own code, the Worley Way. He is a proud papa and dedicated husband, making his home in Colorado. He refused to accept circumstance, taking himself from a man on a path to death to living a world-changing reality. He shares real-life lessons that inspire countless entrepreneurs, thinkers, and those wanting lasting change. His systems guide wealth and well-being. Ron is also the host of a podcast. His podcast is called Sons of Ditches on Spotify. Follow him on Facebook at Ron L. Worley, Instagram at Ronald L. Worley II, or at his website, ronrowley.com. His last name is spelled W-O-R-L-E-Y. Woo! What a bio. I am so excited. So I've already talked enough. So without further ado, let's dive in. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show. So happy to have you here.
Hi, Amanda. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah. So could you, to start the conversation, could you just tell us, you know, a little bit of your story and, you know, how you got to be where you are today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, where I'm at today, I don't even really know what that means anymore. You know, we just try and do new things every day. And to look backwards is just a real weird thing for me nowadays. Yeah. You know, I went from, at 2 years old, my parents were hippies. They thought it would be fun to get me high. Oh. And so I started smoking weed at like 2 years old. And by my parents, I mean, my mother was not on board, but she was highly abused and she just kind of had to go with it. But eventually those two split up and she wanted me to get sober at about 12 years old. And that became like my tipping point. That's when I used to go out and find it somewhere else because I wasn't able to get it at home anymore.
Yeah.
Which wasn't always something I could get. I couldn't find weed. I was 12, you know, how do you find weed at 12?
Right.
Some of my family members would help me out or I'd smoke with them. But for the most part, I would end up finding other things than weed, you know. Oh, I don't have weed, but I have booze or I have, you know, cocaine or whatever. So by the time I was in seventh grade, really, I was a full-blown addict. Mm. You know, every weekend for sure, drinking or drugging of some sort. And in eighth grade, I moved in with my mother and she wanted all that to stop. I moved in with her full time and we moved to Alaska, which gave me, you know, I knew nobody and we're in Alaska, but turns out Alaska is highly, a lot of drugs there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. So the best weed I could ever smoked and acid was in plentiful there. It was very plentiful.
Wow.
I started on the LSD. Gosh, I was doing that once a week, pretty much for 4 years, or if not once a month. That's probably an overstatement. But ultimately, I had this lifestyle where I was hiding from my parents, and I was drugging and drinking every day, every weekend, as much as I could. And then I was also a football star and a wrestling star. And
oh my goodness,
I maintained all this.
Wow.
But eventually, those things just don't work out. So by the time when I went to college to play football, I went with a fake ID. And so goes the story. I was kicked out twice. By the time I was only a sophomore, but I tried to go 3 years, was kicked out year two, kicked out year three, different issues. But ultimately it was my drinking that got me to those places. So, you know, I went on like that. So at 25, I started having kids and I became a bail bondsman with my mother and I started making real money.
Yeah.
And that's when things really, really, really ramped up, got into the cocaine and that was not good for me. Had $1,000 a week cocaine habit, which is about an ounce a week, which is a lot of cocaine for one person.
Yeah.
But you know, I ended up becoming, I lost my wife, my kids, everything I owned. I ended up homeless in 2003 and, I wasn't able to see my kids. And so that 6 months without my kids and being homeless was the bottom for me. And I spent a lot of time drinking to drink away the pain. 24 hours a day, I'd have to wake up in the middle of the night, get rid of the shakes, and drink 100. But you know, that's what I needed. So I rolled a vehicle, the second vehicle in 2 years. I got my third DUI all at once. And I wasn't dead. And so I thought, well, I better change my life. It's time, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to see my kids so bad. And I knew I was screwing up their lives like my father did me. The reason I married their mother was because I didn't want them to go without a father. And here I was doing the same thing. So, and I lost, you know, gosh, I was making six figures a year in the early 2000s. It was good money. And I just blew that, you know, I blew that off. But long story short, I got sober. I went back home, let me stay with him. But in a couple of months, I was able to get my own one bedroom apartment and basically start over. I had two jobs. I was working as a bail agent again. But this time I was treating it like my own business. And ultimately I ended up being business partners with my mother. And then eventually buying her out in 2013. So it all worked out in that direction. You know, I started being more responsible as a sober person. Funny how that works.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. So, and then you fast forward. So that's also how I got into entrepreneurship was bail bonds was such a moneymaker for me. It was my mainstay of income. But the state of Colorado has been attacking bail bonds since 2010, trying to get rid of us. And we have won many close battles.
Why would they want to get rid of you?
Well, so the new rhetoric for America is they think that rich people are the only ones that can get out of jail. It's a false narrative that has been, the ultimate goal is to just let out everybody. Career criminals is the rhetoric. And as you know, we're a purple state. And so this has been a battle for many, many years between the two parties. And overall, it's gone the wrong way. So now they let everybody out for free when you go to jail. But what's happening is we're building career criminals because you're not getting in trouble. You go to jail, you get released. You go to jail, you get released. And then you're supposed to appear in court for these charges on your own recognizance. So funny thing, people don't do that when they're not being forced to go to court.
Right.
We have over a 39% failure to appear rate, which is putting more warrants on the street. And we have nobody looking for them because the police are underfunded and they're not looking for them. They will, if they happen to pull them over or whatnot, then they will throw them in jail. But when you use a bail agent, we go out and hunt them down. It's more about the justice when you use a bail bondsman. That's why judges put us on them. It's not the amount of money. It's the fact that I'm looking for them if they miss court. And that's what bail is all about. So there's a lot less of that now. And during that time, I saw the writing on the wall that I was going to need some other forms of income. And so I started opening businesses. And that became quite fun for me. And we were quite successful at a bunch of different things. And that's how we landed here. I've now owned 15 businesses in my
Holy
lifetime.
Holy crap. Wow.
Not a lot of them. So it's funny. Entrepreneurs only promote their success, right?
Right.
And I did the same thing for many, many years, but now I just promote it all. So, you know, I don't care if it fails after I promote it either. So I've had some failures, of course, you know, nothing is great. Even my successes were promoted as highly successful when there was probably too much work involved and not enough money.
Yeah.
Just like everything else. But that's how we are in America. We just think everything's sunshine and rainbows.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Especially, you know, on social media, you know, like I know for a long time, I felt like I couldn't have a bad day. Like if I had a bad day, there was something fundamentally wrong with me because I wasn't all like, ooh, yay, let's go on social and like cheerlead and do this and that, you know, but the reality of it is that's not real. Like it's just not, we all struggle, you know, whether we've been addicted, incarcerated, whatever it is, we all struggle to some degree and that's not real life, you know?
It's not. And that is something that bothered me with our lifestyle. I called us the Facebook family. My wife was running around taking pictures all the time and we're always smiling, but before the picture, we're like, come on, leave us alone. We don't want to take another picture. And then afterwards we're like, and we walk off, you know? It was like, you captured a moment in time when we faked it. So let's stop doing that. Let's be real. And now we capture the moments in time when we're just being an asshole too.
Exactly. And it's important to do that, you know, because I think, like I said, like too many people are pushing this narrative that you have to be perfect all the time. And it's just not possible. Like it's literally impossible to be perfect all the time.
It is. And that's why I stopped going to church, is because I couldn't be that person that they wanted us to be all the time. And I can't do it for social media. And so I changed my message. I feel like I'm talking a lot about myself here, but I guess that's the point.
Yeah, you're fine. Go ahead. It's interesting.
So I changed my message after I wrote my book. I couldn't be comfortable with being the guy that knew things, you know, the expert in anything. That it's not what I was taught. And especially in my sobriety, it wasn't about me, you know? And so it was really hard for me to sit on one of these podcasts or be somewhere and people ask me for my expert opinion. And I'm like, I just wrote a book. It doesn't make me an expert. So I changed my message from being an expert to just being a ray of light for people, being positive influence in their life, because it's amazing when you unleash people into their positivity, how much brainstorming, they can come up with the most outlandish idea. And I would be like, heck yeah, let's do it. Here's how we do it, blah, blah, blah. And it's a lot of fun for one thing, but it also opens their mind to the possibilities that are out there. And it's amazing to watch people grow when all they have is somebody cheerleading in their corner and giving them good, you know, I'm giving them sound advice. And I'm not really an expert in business. I'm an expert in values, business values. And when I help people figure that out, oh my gosh, they become something, you know, and whether it's nothing or if it's something huge, they still become something else that they built.
Yeah. It's amazing. Values are so important, you know, in life too, because I lived my life for so long without ever thinking about my values, right? I was just like going through the motions and trying to be like everyone else so I could be accepted. But as soon as I had my final rock bottom a few years ago, I realized, well, wait a second, who am I living this life for? Like, I need to figure out who I am and what I value. So I stop repeating these same cycles of toxic relationships and people, places, and things that aren't good for me. But, you know, I would always bow down to toxic people because I was so afraid of losing them because I had no values or boundaries. And I think that can go with business, life, anything really.
Absolutely. And I forgot our stories are very similar. And, you know, what I also found out is same scenario. I would look up to people who had values I would always want to be them because I didn't have my own values. So I would find characteristics of other people and try and mimic that because I thought I could be that. But you can't do it without the values. The values are the core. That's who you be.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And, you know, I think like we're all different. So if we're chasing that, you know, to be like somebody else, you're never going to get there, you know, because you're you. Like fundamentally, you have your base and it's figuring out what that is and then growing from there. You'll never be able to replicate somebody else.
That's right on the money, man. And I used to try and be somebody else through women. I womanized solely to show other people that I was a good person or that I was this or that. If I'm dating this person over here, or if I've had sex with this person over here, she makes me look better. And I literally married my ex-wife because she was pregnant. That was the first thing. And then I introduced her to my family as like a trophy, like, oh, look, she's so nice and great and perfect. And I attracted her. And, you know, this pedestal you put them on, and then all of a sudden you're not being yourself. You're trying to, you know, I'm trying to be her, and it just doesn't work. Ultimately, I ended up doing a whole bunch of bad things to show her that I was myself. And unfortunately, without values, myself is an ugly, ugly person.
Right. Me too. I'm pretty ugly when I don't have values. I can agree with that statement for sure. So if we can like rewind a little bit here. So like your story and your addiction story, like how did you get sober and then stay sober? Like what was your process for that?
So luckily for me, my mother had gotten sober when I was 14, 13 maybe. And so that's why she was hounding on me in high school so much. She knew what I was up to and she was trying to correct it before it happened. And then every time I would have a problem with the law, she would be like, it's because you're drinking. And so she kept pushing me towards AA and she went to AA. And And so I went to AA. That was the first, the very first day I got sober, I went to a meeting. And I was familiar with the rooms because I tried many times before. I even went 8 months sober one time and I thought that was pretty good. And I talked about it like it was a trophy.
Yeah.
But this time when I went to AA, I recognized that I was actually, I used to think I was better than the people in the rooms. Mm. And this time I'm like, oh, I am worse than these people because these guys are sober.
Right.
But, you know, after I knew in my heart, then I was done. I was just, I didn't need it anymore. I just knew. I went to the rooms of AA until I hit 1 year, got my chip. And then I said, sayonara. For me, it was a great start. And that's, my mother was the same way. She did 6 months or a year and then she bounced. But I just couldn't live in the sobriety part of it forever. Yeah. Because it was like wallowing for me. I don't say that's for everybody, but for me, I personally think that alcoholism and addiction is something we can overcome. It doesn't have to be a lifetime thing. Because I switched my thinking from I'm forever an addict to I just don't drink. And if I don't drink, I don't do drugs. That's how my life works. So it is something I can overcome. You know, it's something I had to stop doing first. And then, you know, now I don't have any cravings or anything along those lines. Yeah. So, and I have booze in my house. You know, I have a full bar that we keep for company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I always have. And my goal was for my kids to grow up with it in a response. They never saw me drink ever in their lives. They don't remember. My daughter was 6 when I got sober. And the alcohol was there, but we never used it. My wife doesn't drink. Like it's not a thing. And so they grew up with it being like a responsible thing. Now they've all drank, they all party. One of them's still in college. They're partying their balls off, but very, very responsible. We see our kids every Thursday for dinner. They come over to the house. All 3 of them have moved out. They come over for dinner and, you know, they all have jobs and go to school and highly responsible. If they are addicts, then they're doing a good job of hiding it. And that could be too, but for the most part, they've not had issues with alcoholism or drug addiction at all.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty cool coming from my dumb ass, but I think it really was the fact that I brought up my stories at the appropriate times in their lives.
Yeah.
We just discussed it early on so that it wasn't like I was trying to hammer on him in high school. And my daughter, she went off, she became an alien at 13. She went off the deep end, according to what I think anyways. She was drinking and partying too much and not going to school and barely graduated and things like that. But that was more my problem than it was hers. As soon as I got on board with her not going to college, not being what I wanted her to be, not dating the guys I wanted her to date, the better our relationship grew. And honestly, that was about a year and a half ago when I finally got on board with her life. And she's now a mother and married a guy I didn't necessarily like at the time, but he's coming around. And
nice. So,
yeah. And she's got some really cute kids that were aww, his and that mom. And it is what it is. I'm grand dude.
Grand dude. I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of the things addiction, it has taught me. And I just took so many years is that I cannot control other people. You know, with my kids, you just have to get to that cutoff point. And by the time the third kid left the house, he left at 18. He was excited to get out. But I was cool with it. Like, okay, you got a job and you're out of the house. It's great. Good for you. And now him and my two boys are actually buying a house together. One's 22, one's 19.
Oh,
or no,
nice.
Sorry, 20. Yeah. So they got their shit together, you know?
Who that's cares amazing. Yeah. Like my, you know, like you said, like we can't control other people. That's so true because, you know, I have control issues, you know, because I always thought, well, if I can control the situation, if I can change this guy to be who I want him to be, then I'm helping him. That was always my mentality. Like, oh, you're abusive, but you know what? I can change you and you're just going to be this amazing person. And then meanwhile, like, we're using together and it's a shit show. Yeah. But in my mind, I was helping him. I was going out and buying the drugs. I was making all the money. I was providing everything, right? But meanwhile, it's not good. You know, it's toxic.
Codependency.
Yeah. Codependency is real. Yeah.
And
yep. And we, you know, and when you're in that type of relationship where you're using together, you're enabling each other, and then there's no growth. There's no, you can't, it's like smoking cigarettes. Like I vape now, but I quit smoking cigarettes. But when my husband was still smoking cigarettes and he wanted to quit and I was still smoking, he struggled and vice versa, you know, but now that neither of us do, it was easier, you know, because you have to, it's harder to change your behaviors if you're constantly engrossed in that behavior through somebody else that you're spending your life with, right?
Right.
So
absolutely. And I think that's why they say you need two holes to make a perfect circle. And, I always thought that was bullshit, because I loved the women I was with, especially long-term. I love women. I did. And I always thought, well, I can be a perfect whole the way they want me to, and it will work. But you're right. You get stifled. You start becoming their responsibility rather than their partner.
Yeah.
And you stifle your growth. That's just, it's dead after that.
Yeah. And it's
and
really,
then the trust goes away.
Yeah. There's no trust, you know, like I know there was one relationship I was in, after I was arrested, I was out on bail and I was, that was one of the darkest years of my life. I was stripping. And because I thought, you know, like this is what I should be doing because I don't know what's going to happen to my life, right? But this person I was with, like he was, you know, encouraged that. Like he wanted me to do that, you know? And so I did it. And then I ended up, you know, cheating on him. You know, I'm in this environment where there's men paying attention to me. And, you know, some of them were quite attractive at the time to me, you know, and it was easy to fall into those traps. And that codependency became like, I'm bringing home all the money. He was stealing it from me. You know, we were like feeding off of each other in that regard. Right. But men were always an issue for me. I always thought I needed a man. You know, I can't exist without a man. What does that even mean? You know?
Right.
And, you know, that constant need for that approval led me to be attracted to men who were toxic and abusive, or some of them were good people, but with me, it didn't work. You know, it doesn't mean that these people are fundamentally bad people underneath that. I mean, some of them I could probably say are, but at the end of the day, it was me putting myself in these scenarios that, you know, getting so dependent on that person to do things for me, or I would get high off of just like being in charge, you know, like, I'm making all the money. So, you know, this is how it's going to be. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Well, and then we go out and search for, when we're in that situation, we want that. If that's giving you a high, you're going out and searching for people that you think are beneath you so that you can control them.
Yep.
Not somebody that's going to make you grow as a person or is going to challenge you, in all aspects of your life. I'm guilty of that too. I spent years just finding people that I could basically swindle into being around me long enough to have sex with them. And that was my life. And now I'm married to, I've been with her, I think we're on 16 years. I should probably know that.
It's okay.
So I'm going on 19 years sober. So she would be, I think, it's 17, my bad. 17 years. but she has challenged me every step of the way. I've challenged her. Together we run business well, we raise kids well, we do everything together, we complement each other. But I had to be sober long enough to be healed. I went to counseling for 5 years, just trying to understand what I'm coming from. And then lo and behold, 2012, I met a guy that said, "You need values, dude." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I have them. I don't believe in stealing and all." Yeah. Not what he meant. And so when I got values, that's when my wife and I got stronger. We came up the Worley way, 10 values that we started to raise. We agreed to my values. And that was a first for me.
That's awesome.
Half of my values she believed in too. And so we started running the kids' lives through that. You know, we raised them that way. We started running our businesses that way. We would hire people that had equal values or some of their own values. We wouldn't talk to them about their skill level. We would talk to them about their values. And we started keeping employees that way. But ultimately, it's the partnership with my wife that is great. And when we were, so a couple of years ago, we were failing as a relationship, like bad. And I talked about leaving and splitting our money and all that good stuff. And instead, we went to counseling, which I never believe counseling for couples works very well. But it did, because both of us tried really hard to change the trajectory of our relationship. And it worked. It was, we've never been better. We keep saying that to each other. Aww. Even when we're fighting.
That's awesome. You know, I can completely relate to that too, because my husband now, like, he lifts me up, you know, we are a team, you know, and when I almost destroyed our marriage right at the beginning of it, I don't even know, I still have no idea why he stayed with me, but I'm glad he did. But, you know, we talked it out, you know, and we didn't end up going to therapy, but that was something we were looking into, but we figured it out. But he's the one who taught me about values. He's like, well, you have no boundaries, Amanda. Like, no wonder why this keeps happening. You just let people just walk all over you because you think somehow they're going to, because I had this job and I thought these people were so cool and they were so wealthy and the drinking and the drugs. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to be just like them, right? But at the end of the day, I was losing myself in it. And he's the one who guided me through that and helped me see myself in a different light. So without him, I don't know if I would be here talking to you right now. So
yeah. That's amazing. I can't wait to have you on my podcast so we can really just dive into that.
Yeah.
We can now if you'd rather. So it's interesting because he was your, I think my wife was my savior too. But more like she made me better because she was better. She didn't do anything to me. She just showed me by example how good it can be. And you're right, the boundaries thing. Addicts don't have boundaries. So and values is better than boundaries because you can have a little leeway there. What's your confrontation level like? Do you fear it? Do you love it? How's your confrontation level?
I hate confrontation. I avoid it at all costs.
Me too. When I was an addict, though, I used to beat the hell out of people and be in fights all the time and argue and just be all about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that chaos, I run from it now. I can't.
Yeah, I can't handle it. Like chaos, I thrived off of it, Ron. Like that was like everything. If it wasn't chaos, I was like, well, I need to create some. So let me go do something stupid real quick so I have chaos. Yeah. You know, like that was my life for so long. And now, like, I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll look around and be like, man, like shit is so calm. Like this doesn't, it almost doesn't feel right. You're like, is this what life is really, is this what boring life really is? Like this, yeah, it's fucking boring. So sit on the couch and watch TV. Like I don't go to bars anymore. Like what am I doing with my life? But it's also, but if it does become chaotic, I can't handle it anymore. It's like, like I just need it to stop, you know?
So a lot of, when I have chaos, I was just explaining to my assistant today because we had a bad day yesterday and a lot of stuff, she said, I get piled on and I can't handle it. And I'm like, I said, yeah, I get that. So back in the day, chaos is how I kept from worrying about myself. I had all these issues. Now when I'm get chaos, I just try to leave it there and okay, I'm going to deal with one little thing at a time. Yeah, it's overwhelming. I run from confrontation, but how can I get like a couple of these items off of my table so that I can deal with this one or that one? And it seems to work much better. And then lo and behold, here she was, and she was just like me back then. And it made my day worse because she was so freaked out by by the chaos, you know? And I was like, well, it'll work out.
Yeah, it'll work out. I promise. Yeah. It sucks right now. But, you know, that's the thing with chaos. Like, you know, when you're in active addiction, that's true. Like, you thrive on it because, like you said, I don't think I ever had that thought that you just said. I was like, oh, yeah, that's totally what I was doing. You're masking what's really going on because if there's chaos, that's what I'm dealing with now. And I'm going to go scream at this person, cuss this person out, you know. And now, like, I couldn't cuss someone out if someone paid me. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I just cower in my, like, no, it's cool. Like, we'll figure this out a different way, you know, because I don't want that intense emotion of, you know, that argument. Like, confrontation is very scary.
It's so true. And if you talk to, if you ever talk to an addict or somebody that's actively an addict, everything you, so I work with criminals, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so when they tell their story, it's all about everything everybody's done to them. It's never about an actual, it's never about themselves. It's all about this person did it to me. There's no accountability. And it's, you can, I can just, it makes me feel icky because you're getting, you know, you're getting wrapped up in their life and it's all he said, she said, and it has nothing to do with curing the root cause, which is, you're an alcoholic or, you're a drug addict.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. And if it quiets long enough, I'm going to hate myself bad enough that I'm going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
It's that victim mentality, right? I remember like I would be like, I don't know why this keeps happening to me. Like, you know, like she made me do this or he made me do this or I got incarcerated because, you know, this happened. It's not, you know, I never wanted to look at me ever. Right. It was not something I could do in those moments. Now, you know, when I started looking at myself, I was like, ooh, this is, I'm sober and I'm looking inward and this is really scary and quite painful. But the more you work on yourself, the more you look inside of yourself, the better your life becomes. And you lose all that toxicity and you stop attracting it into your life because it no longer serves you.
And there's never been a better feeling in my life as to when I lost those friends that I called friends and just exited from their lives. It felt so good to like lose that. It's like shedding new skin, you know, you're just losing all that negativity and the chaos with it. Can I ask you how you got sober? Did you have a program? Or?
So I've been got sober many times. The first time I got sober, I went to NA, which I loved. I really liked being in the rooms, but I moved. So I was living in the city and I moved back home outside of the city. And when I did that, I was in a relationship. So I kind of just like made my life the relationship. So I gave up on it. And that was obviously not the best choice for me. But this time, the hopefully final time I get sober, I literally just made the choice. Like, I can't handle my life if I'm using alcohol or substances. I have to stop. And I try my best to live one day at a time, and I do still get cravings. I don't like feeling emotions to this day. I don't like it. But I tell myself, you can get through this. You don't need to pick up because the moment you pick up, it's no longer going to be just this emotion. It's going to become a snowball of shit, you know, and that's how I stay sober.
So there's a guy named Mike Fiore. He's in he's all over Instagram and TikTok, but him and a few other people came up with an app. It's called the Sober App. I haven't looked at it yet, but I hear it's great. And it's like a community of, it's like a community of addicts that are on this thing. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm just telling you that. I don't know if it's important in your life or not, but
I'll look at it. That sounds interesting.
So the thing that kept me sober also was, besides my kids, was helping other people. You know, that was something they said in AA. And I did go to NA as well. My sponsor was an NA sponsor. I liked that better because he was harder on me. But, you know, they always said you need to be a service to people in order to stay out of your own shit.
And yeah.
Very true.
It's so true. Like doing this show and, you know, I don't coach people right now. I don't feel that I'm ready to coach people. Eventually, maybe that'll happen, but not right now. So all I do is tell my story and tell the stories of others. And it's so healing and giving people a place, a safe place to tell their stories. And going on social and seeing all these amazing people who are sober and congratulating them and just, you know, helping boost up these people who, you know, I think we lived under rocks for so long and, you know, felt like we didn't have a voice. And just hearing other people speak their stories is so, it's just amazing. And if I was still actively using, I wouldn't be listening.
Right. So. Ain't that facts? And, and I think it, just telling your story can help out so many people. When I started my, we started a retail chain called Max Muscle, and we had four stores. And the first store, you know, I was still ashamed of who I was. I was an addict, you know, I was still hiding from it, kind of. But then one day, the guy, same guy that told me I needed value, said I need to share my story. And so he made me put it on our website. And when I did that, I put it on front page website. Here's Ron Worley, feature of the month. Here's his story. Wow, the people came out of the woodwork to be a customer, basically. They would come into the store and they'd want to talk to me, and they had shared similar stories. Everybody is affected by addiction in their family somewhere, and everybody can relate. So once I started doing that, boy, all of a sudden I was helping people without helping people. Like,
yeah,
just giving them an opportunity to open up, you know? Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah, it is. It is really cool. You know, I get, not very often as I just started doing all this, but sometimes I'll get these messages like, wow, Amanda, you just inspired me. And I'm like, what? Me? Like, I'm a fuck up. What do you mean? How did I inspire you? I don't understand. But that's the whole point of it. You know, that right. in itself, like you said, like telling your story is, it helps other people, whether they speak it to you, say that you help them or not, like you are helping somebody. Absolutely. You know, every time you tell your story, every time you go on social and share something inspiring, somebody sees it that needed to see it, whether they say it or not.
Yeah. And, you know, I, like you said before, with the social media, everybody's faking it and whatnot. It's nice and it's almost relieving to hear somebody talk shit about themselves in a past way, you know?
Yeah.
What I used to be like, what I'm like now. That's what it's all about, you know?
Yeah.
I think everybody deserves a second chance, and sometimes three and four chances.
For sure.
Personally, I don't coach either because I'm not going to be around for all those chances. It's none of my business. So my rule, if I mentor somebody, they have to be sober no matter what. Because a lot of people I do deal with have never had drinking or drug problems. But they have to be sober and they have to go through the program to get their values put together. And then I'm on board. You know, if they can do all that and read and take time to know who they are, perfect. They're a good candidate. Then it relieves me from some of the stress of losing somebody. You know, right at first I was trying to mentor people and they would go back out and use drugs or screw up their lives, get arrested or whatever. And it just broke my heart. Like, oh, yeah. God. And then you're in their drama, and then it's no different in being, you might as well be drinking too because you're dealing with their bullshit.
Yeah, it's hard. And it's hard to watch that unfold, you know? It's hard to see someone, like in my past, like I've had moments of sobriety and there was somebody I was very close to and I tried to help him. I kept saying, you know, like you're worth so much. I would slip him little like pamphlets from NA. Like I'll go with you, you know. But then watching him just keep relapsing and relapsing and relapsing and just completely destructing his life. And it's just like, ah, you know, and it breaks your heart every single time. That's really hard. So I don't know if I could mentor someone who is still in active addiction either. That would be putting me back in a scenario where I don't know if I'm strong enough to say no. What if I was presented with something like, hey, Amanda, come hang out with me like in person and they pull out cocaine. I can't guarantee that I won't do it, you know, so I can't put myself in those scenarios anymore because I used to. You know, and we all know what happens. So it's not good for anybody. So
that's funny. So do you have other addictions? Boy, I feel, should I be asking you questions?
No, it's fine. It's
do you still have active addictions that you like, more positive ones?
Yeah, like now I'm addicted to podcasting. It's a huge addiction. I love podcasting. But I'm also addicted to being with my family. I mean, there's not a day that goes by that my kids, they're not to my husband. So they're not here all the time. So it's, you know, balancing, because my husband will always tell me, like, I can't put my happiness on my kids' shoulders. And I tend to get really depressed when they're not around. So it's working on, you know, getting better at dealing with that separation anxiety, so to speak. But, you know, just I'm addicted to just being like a hope dealer and just talking about things and being real. Like, you know, I don't go on social media and pretend. Like, if I'm having a bad day, I mean, I'll post about it. Not every single time, but I'll write a poem or I'll, you know, make a reel. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's another one. I think I'm addicted to making reels and I don't know if I'm that great at it either, but it's fun. So it is fun. I enjoy it.
I do it too. Did you just say hope dealer?
Yeah.
I love that. I'm going to use that. Is it all right if I steal that?
Yeah, you can steal it. Yeah, I have that on my awesome. My Facebook. People always tell me, oh, I love that. Hope dealer. That's what I am. I deal hope.
Yeah.
You know, like the world needs more hope, you know. And
I love it.
I think that together, you know, if more of us, you know, who have been through addiction, incarceration, mental illness, you know, any type of thing like that, come together more and start collaborating and really elevating our voices together, it could change so much for so many people who are still suffering. And that's my whole mission. I want people who are still suffering to hear my voice and know that they're not alone and there is a better way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, that your story there just made me realize, well, I've realized it before. The people that love me that were watching me go down in flames, you just described what we were doing. You know, that's what we look at. And then you got to flip it. And by the grace of God, there go I. I was making people very sad by going back out and using and drugging and, you know, just ruining their lives too. It's amazing how it comes full circle always, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So do you have any positive addictions? I can ask you the same question.
So I call them passions, but my family calls them addictions. They're like, every month, Dad, you're into something new. So I've done it all. Like I started painting a few years ago, and then I didn't just paint like once in a while. I got into it really super far. I started doing paintings for other people, and they asked me to do stuff. And then I had shows, and it became a job. Only there's no money in it. Right. So it became a job for nothing. And I burned out like a year into it, about a year, and I was done with it. And I haven't painted in 2 years now, but I've got like 700 paintings all over the place. But it's stuff like that. I get it. I just always try and find something to get into. And a lot of times it's businesses. I love to get in, figure out, you know, how to make money at something.
Yeah.
And that's an addiction for me. When I first got sober, it was the gym. I went to the gym nonstop, and I ultimately ended up getting into bodybuilding and drug-free bodybuilding. And that got out of control. I ended up buying businesses to support that. And
oh, goodness.
Pretty soon it made my mind think that I was fat when I wasn't fat, and just weird, you know, because everything I do goes way too far still to this day. And so I have to figure out how to cut the ties. And that's what we ended up doing. We made money on the business. So it was time to sell and get out of it and get away from that mindset of bodybuilding.
That's tough.
You know, it's like what I've been through versus that. It was like super stupid. You know, to me, it was like no big thing, but it was kind of, you know, I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me because my brain says I'm fat. You know, I still to this day battle how I look in the mirror because of those years. But I've learned that, it's how we're defined. You know, this is, you got to go through some of that shit so that you are the person you are today. And all these passions that I have, just to me, it's like, I don't want to miss out and I don't want to have regrets. I live every day like I'm dying tomorrow. So I try and maximize every day. And sometimes that means I just sit in my golf simulator and dick around and play golf. So
that sounds fun. I like to play. I'm not a golf golfer. Like I don't play actual golf, but I have an Oculus and there's a, oh, yeah, a VR golf. Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. It's the best thing ever.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
But
man, I'm going to have to get that.
Oh, Oculus is awesome. I don't play it as often as I would like to, but if I had more time in my life to just fuck off, like that would be my thing. And I'm not even a gamer, but that like is, it's so much fun. But you know, like you said too, like, you know, you take everything to the max, you know, and I tend to do that too. And sometimes like when I first started trying to be an entrepreneur and starting businesses, I've failed at businesses, any business I've started, I think I failed at, but it was all a learning experience at the end of it. But my husband, like it started to affect our marriage because I was so obsessed. Like I have to do this. I have to be on social. I have to do this. I have to do this. And like, it's learning how to balance that and not allowing it to take over your life, just like drugs or alcohol and chaos and all that shit did in the past. It's no different. Yep. It's you're replacing it for something else.
Yep, know? Absolutely. The worldly way, the top two values are family and hard work, and those two battle each other nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's more important at this given point in time? Luckily, all my kids moved out, and now hard work is different, and it's pretty selfish because it's for my retirement, not them. I haven't given my kids any money since they moved out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In fact, they pay me every month for their insurance and, and phone bill. Like, so they,
well, hey, that's, you know, that's good. That means you taught them good about money and responsibility.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've done pretty good. And, you know, I'm just so damn proud of them. They all three of them worked at 15 years old. You can't work in Colorado until 16. But they went out and basically got jobs in with real paychecks at 15. I don't know how they did it.
That's impressive. Yeah, my son just turned 16 and he's like applying for all these jobs. And once he literally will tell me, I'm moving out as soon as I hit 18. He's so fucking smart. Like smart. Oh, yeah. He wants to be an engineer, but I've been telling him his whole life after I realized how intelligent he was. I was like, you should be an engineer. And now, like the other day, he goes, Mom, he goes, I'm going to be an engineer. He goes, I can't believe it. He goes, you were right. I was like, I know.
That's awesome, man. So he must be really good at book work because those engineers, man, they are book smart like no one.
So smart. Oh, yeah. I mean, like in coding, holy shit. Like, it's like, I don't understand what he does. But he's like, look, Mom, I created this calculator and it actually works. I'm like, what? How did you do that? And it's just like this list of like numbers and letters and symbols. Yeah. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like my mind's just blown by his intelligence. And he's quick too. Like he can not go to class and still get straight A's. Like it's, I don't understand. But it's impressive. You know,
That's and really cool.
Another thing about him too that I'm so grateful for, you know, my kids mean, they're everything, right? And he promised himself and me that he will never drink because his father is an alcoholic. And he was like, I will never. He goes, Mom, he goes, you couldn't pay me to pick up alcohol. And I'm like, good. Like, keep it
that's
that
good.
Way. Because, really, you know, you have two addicts as parents. I don't know what your chances are of not being one. So it's good that you don't pick it up at all. So,
absolutely. How many kids do you have?
I have two. My daughter's 8. So she hasn't quite gotten to that point yet to where I can, you know, have adult conversations with her. But she's smart in her own right. Not like him, but she has her own.
Street smart.
Yeah. She's always thinking. She's a thinker, you know?
Yeah, she's probably a lot like mama.
Yeah. Like, how can I figure this situation out?
So addicts make the best business people because they're so damn street smart. They've learned how to manipulate and make things happen for themselves as an addict. And you can, and that's all business is. It's relationships and how do you manipulate those relationships to make money. That's it. And so she's probably going to grow up and be wildly successful in business.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Have my engineer and my entrepreneur.
Yeah,
she tells me too.
Probably work together.
Yeah, because she always tell me, because she went, like during the summer, she sees me working. I'm doing these meetings and all this stuff. Because I want to do what you do. That's going to be my first job. I'm like, oh, okay. I'll teach you the ways.
Yeah, lead by example.
Yeah.
What do you do for a living? besides this?
My day job, I'm an office manager for a mental health outpatient practice.
Oh my gosh.
And then I have a client too. I used to be a virtual assistant, and I have one client still from that I've been working with for like years. There was a hiatus when I went back to a full-time job. But as soon as that whole thing erupted, I asked him if he needed an assistant. And he was like, oh my gosh, yes, come back. So,
a virtual assistant. So you just do everything on Zoom and
pretty much. He's local. So we can meet in person, which we do. I try to meet him once a month in person. But typically it's all online. And then my day job since the pandemic, I've been working remotely too. So it's been really nice. And flexibility is amazing with working remotely. I can take my kids to school. I can, I don't feel as tied down. But the only thing that sucks is I'm by myself all the time. Do-do-do, just me.
Yeah.
Another day of me.
In your head. No wonder you want podcasting. You get to at least be with somebody else for a
bit. Yeah, it's nice. But anyways, Ron, can you tell the audience, if they wanted to learn more about you or connect with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, so if they go to sonsofditches.com,
I love that, by the way, Sons of Ditches.
Thank you. Thank you. Sonsofditches.com or ronworley.com. Eventually, Ron Worley is going to be on Sons of Ditches. We're in the middle of doing all that right now. But that's where you go. My book is on there. My merchandise, everything, our podcast, everything I do is on there. Sonsofditches.com. Now, the really fun part is to go to my TikTok, Sons of Ditches, and watch those because they're freaking funny. So.
I'll have to find you. I'm not an avid TikToker. I tried to do TikTok, but I don't know what it is. I can't get into it. I love watching TikToks, but there's something that scares me about it. I don't know. I'm like, I have three TikToks and they're horrible. So nobody go check those out. But I do the reels, but not the TikToks.
So I have reels too. So you can find me since you're doing that. You can find me on Instagram at Ronald L. Worley II. And so you and I can be friends on Instagram. Yay. Same thing.
Yeah, we'll definitely connect there. I love Instagram. It's where I go to pass the time, right?
Yeah.
And
I love the reels. The reels are great. They're funny. TikTok.
Yeah. I like to do the voice, the lip syncing. So I always look through them all to save all the sounds and then I go back and use them. Yeah. It's fun. It's addictive.
I'm going to find you now.
That's funny. But my one last question for you, Ron. This has been a fantastic conversation, by the way. I really appreciate your time. But what would be your number one tip for our listeners to allow the good things into their lives?
Yeah. So don't allow your past to define your future. Mm. Once we do that, our future is just toast. So stay away from it.
Yeah. I love that. That's one of my favorite quotes. I say that all the time. I used to say, your past doesn't define you, but I was like, but your past is who you are. Oh, your past doesn't define your future. That's the ticket.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Ron, so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. That was a great conversation. I can't wait to meet with you on my show.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And as a reminder for everyone listening, remember, you are stronger than you think, and you can have the life you imagine regardless of your past. Make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of the show, and I will talk to you all soon.